So this is the Domestic Violence Awareness Education Program, and I'm your host, Donna Hawkes. And today I have with me Lynn Archambault, who is the director of the Women's Lodge, the domestic violence shelter here in Lake Andes. And we are coming to you at, you know, it's a beautiful day outside. It's a beautiful day. And so, you know, hopefully you're catching some of the sun and the rays to help you feel good. And so I'd just like to welcome Lynn this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Donna.
And it's always a pleasure to have Lynn here because she's very knowledgeable about domestic violence and the dynamics of it. And today we're going to be talking about dual arrest. In particular, and Lynn is going to give us some information about the Yankton Sioux tribes, the Yhungtwa Dakota Oyate, their code and their domestic violence code, and then we'll look at some of the things that are happening around dual arrest. So, Lynn, welcome to the program, and let's go ahead and do a little bit about the DV code here.
The Yankton Sioux Tribal Code has a mandatory arrest provision in it, which means that if an officer is called out in a domestic violence situation, that once he assesses the situation, the victim does not have to sign a report in order for the officer to make an arrest. But what we see happening is the officers are making the arrest, but because the victims aren't signing a report, the perpetrators aren't being prosecuted. So I think we have some breakdown there between the police officers and tribal court.
But under mandatory arrest, doesn't that move out of the victim's hands once that the perpetrator is arrested?
It's supposed to, but the prosecutor that we have in place at tribal court feels like that in order to make the charges valid and stick, wants or needs a statement from the victim. And a lot of this came out that when we had recently, we just had law enforcement training and had Pearl down from the coalition, and she did a 2-day training here in Charles Mix County for law enforcement. And there were several BIA tribal police officers that came to the training, which was an awesome thing, gave us an opportunity to meet them and, you know, share some concerns and some ideas. And one of those concerns is the fact that they're making the arrest, but then the perpetrators aren't being prosecuted.
Which isn't uncommon, unfortunately, across the country.
Yeah, and it gets really frustrating for them. And then one of the things that we talked about was in the tribal code, it also states that when there is a domestic violence arrest, they are to fax or mail or deliver a copy of that report to the designated shelter, which would be the Women's Lodge in this case here in Charles Mix County. And what that would do, that's not something that's happening today, but what that would do is that would allow us to follow up with that victim and help her with support, being, you know, protection orders if she needed protection orders, or an attorney if she needed an attorney to help with custody issues or any of those things that, you know, would allow us to reach out to women who don't reach out to us.
Right, and because, you know, there's that fear.
Absolutely.
You know, the woman is fearful of the perpetrator coming back at her. And if she does make that report, and if she does testify, and that's what mandatory arrest, partly that's what mandatory arrest is about, so the victim doesn't have to pursue that. So In any case, now we're talking about mandatory arrest, and let's talk about dual arrest.
Dual arrest is when an officer is called to a domestic violence scene, they arrest both parties, both the man and the woman. And this comes from an era, or is left over from an era, of when we first started looking at crimes of violence against women, especially here in our area. And the officers maybe weren't trained as well. They weren't, hadn't experienced it as often. And we still see it happen today, where instead of evaluating the situation and deciding who's the aggressor or who has the opportunity to cause the most physical harm, they arrest both parties.
And in some cases, granted, you know, that may be necessary.
Sure.
But dual arrest has been, not only in our area, but around the country, it really has been problematic. And with arresting or attending officers, just taking both parties in and not really using that discretion that they have to determine that, okay, so we have a man and a woman here, and or we have, you know, intimate partners.
Right.
And one is the aggressor and one is the victim.
Right. And aggressor does not always mean the person who hit first.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I mean, it gets really cloudy. It gets, you know, it gets really hard to make those judgments when you're out there, you know, and I feel for police officers that have to make those judgments.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it is part of their job to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And not just say, well, the easy way is I'm just going to take them both to jail and let the courts figure it out. And what we see happening, or what we see happen is, the women will quickly plead guilty in order to be able to get out, go home to their children, go back to their jobs, and those sort of things, where the men will sit and plead not guilty, and by the time it gets around to trial time, they've reconciled, or, you know, things have happened, the woman doesn't show up for court or whatever, and they're not getting any charges at all. So you have women who are picking up domestic violence charges on dual arrest that really and truly are the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to, you know, the family will bond them out for $300 or whatever. And $300 is hard to come by. So to get that bond back, they'll make their arraignment here, you know, they'll make their hearing and they'll plead guilty and they'll get their money back and then they'll get back to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And in the meantime, they have this on the record.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And in looking at, like you said, the reasons, some of the reasons why women end up with these is because they need to get back to, many times there's children involved, they need to get back to the children. They need to get back to, if they're working, back to the job to ensure that they've got money coming in. And so it really does present such a dilemma when, in fact, you know, the perpetrator is able to sit back and do what he needs to do and end up with no charges.
Exactly.
That's really something.
And, you know, then you take both parents out of the home. So then, you know, what happens to the kids? Well, if there's not a family member close, then they end up in social services. They end up in foster care. And then, you know, the woman's got that whole process to go through to get her children back. So it really is another way for women to be victimized. And it really is another way for the perpetrators to be able to continue to victimize and re-victimize
mm-hmm.
these women.
Mm-hmm.
and I think when we first, you know, when domestic violence was first beginning to be prosecuted and everybody was really starting to take a look at it, it was kind of like, okay, what do we do? You know, how do we handle this? What do we do with this? And that seemed to be the best solution, was arrest them both and let the courts figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our officers are educated well enough now and have dealt with the problem of domestic violence enough now that we really should see a significant drop in dual arrest.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, we've been focusing on BIA officers, but what about, you know, the city and county?
You have the same issue there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you have a young officer or a new officer that doesn't, you know, necessarily maybe isn't as versed as a seasoned officer. I think sometimes in the process of trying to decide who the aggressor is, they allow the perpetrator to think that, you know, it's okay if she hit him, you know, they'll both go to jail, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a blessing for us to be able to offer this training to our local law enforcement. And it's encouraging that, you know, the BIA officers did attend.
Yeah.
And how many BIA officers?
There was four. I don't know. There was four at the training. I'm not sure exactly.
Four at the training.
I want to say 6 to 8, maybe, officers total.
Okay. And did we have any city or county officers in attendance?
Not this year, but I will preface that by saying that I know that they had just gone through similar training.
Oh, okay.
And this is the first year that we offered since I've been here, you know, that we offered this type of training. So what we're trying to establish is an annual training. So hopefully next year they'll know that we're going to do it again in October and they'll make plans.
And I do have to say that last year we have been having this, and now Lynn has joined us just this year as the shelter director and doing an outstanding job. But I do want to add that last year, I remember that we did a law enforcement training again with Pearl Gilbranson, and we had just a full house.
Yeah.
I mean, there were BIA, city, you know, all the local law enforcement, yeah, maybe not every single one of them, but we did have a full house. So, you know, I want to, you know, thank all of the officers who do attend these trainings, and in particular, not only the ones provided by the South Dakota Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault and the Native American Community Board, but also that attend the state trainings. And I do also want to add that they have to have, I believe it's 40 hours a year to certify.
I think it's every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Yeah.
And the training that Pearl does can offer them that. And one thing that stands out from the training that Pearl Gilbranson is able to offer is we can really look at some issues for Native people. And she's very well versed in that, and very respectful of talking about those things. And so that is something that might possibly not be addressed through the state trainings, and or addressed in as in depth as the coalition can provide.
We can get really specific to the things that we see in our area. You know, mm-hmm. And one of the things that came out in the training was the issue of how do we get the victims to sign a report, mm-hmm, so that we can get them prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
Because the code's good, and it sets, you know, some really strict guidelines that if these guys, we should be seeing, per the code, we should be seeing on Wednesday night, you know, we should have a house full as far as the men's re-education group goes.
For batterers.
For batterers. Mm-hmm. The code says that if they're arrested for domestic violence, they are to go through a re-education program. So we should be seeing that, and we're not.
And you know, we just encourage the, because that would come like from their probation officer, yeah, or from the judge.
It usually comes down from an order from the judge.
Order from the judge.
Because most of the time, the first offense is a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be something that they're going to be dealing with a probation officer on.
Mm-hmm.
And we have set up some guidelines within state court that if they are, if the judge orders them to come to class, there's a form that they fill out. It's faxed over to us. And those sort of things. So, but, you know, first time offenders, we see a lot of plea bargaining. We see a lot of, yes, you know, it comes down to, instead of it being domestic assault, it just becomes simple assault. Mm-hmm. So it takes away the domestic element of it. And I really think, you know, they're doing the victim a disservice, a tremendous disservice. But I also think that they're doing these men a disservice, because I really think they're setting them up to be back. You know, they're getting what the code calls for. The code calls for them to go through some re-education. Also with the state, you know, they can, especially if there's drugs or alcohol involved.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to have, substance abuse evaluations. They're supposed to have, you know, the re-education process. And by dropping that domestic tag, it takes them out of that arena. So I think we've got to, you know, make a cry out there to, if it's domestic, it needs to be charged domestic.
Right.
Because, mm-hmm, you're re-victimizing the victim by not doing it that way, and you're not doing what needs to be done to re-educate and keep it from happening again.
Right, because they certainly, I mean, with the men's re-education program for batterers, the whole purpose of this is to help identify those things that allow perpetrators, batterers, to continue to with their behaviors. And so that's exactly what it is. It's a re-education class. And so, of course, you know, a batterer at any time can make that decision, that choice not to batter. And that is, you know, that would be the best thing, and because it is a choice that is made to strike out, to intimidate, to use whatever kind of batterer's tactics that are used. That is a choice. And so, and just for your information, the men's re-education class for batterers is held on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 to 8 o'clock at 809 High Street, the resource center here in Lake Andes. And men are certainly encouraged to attend that. You don't have to be court ordered to attend this. You can, if you feel that there's something there for you, you can certainly come on your own. And if you feel that, you know, in listening to some of the programming or hearing, being educated elsewhere, wherever the source is, and you're thinking, well, you know, I am actually doing some of these tactics with my partner. You know, I keep her isolated from her family and friends. Maybe I should go to the men's re-education class. Or, you know, yeah, I keep all the money. She doesn't get any of the money because I feel like I have to control it all, which is a tactic as well. And so there's any number of reasons why the batterers re-education class exists. Yeah, and it is open. And once again, you can call 605-487-7130 and talk to Lynn. And Lynn is co-facilitator with Richard Milda and for the Batteries Reeducation class, and visit with her about possibly attending. So it is open to men.
Very much so. And it would be, you know, a great thing if we had a room full of mm-hmm. their own accord and not have to fight the courts to get someone there, you know. And we, you know, we write a letter for you saying that you're attending the class and keep in touch with the court so they do know that it's you know, that you're there and you're doing what you're supposed to do. So,
and it is all very much culturally appropriate with Richard Milda, and so there are a lot. The discussions are very, very interesting, and in terms of looking at tactics that batterers use and behaviors, and options of changing those behaviors, but also at the cultural aspect of who we are as Native people. And so it's very interesting on several levels. And of course, you know, battering, abuse, violence against women and children is not traditionally part of who we are. And so that is a, you know, the real basic foundation of the Batteries Reeducation class. And to reclaim those original teachings and those ways of how we treat one another, and in particular our women.
And Richard, I mean, he has so much knowledge, and he, you know, he shares it in a way that is so non-confrontational and so easy to learn from, and, you know, non-judgmental, mm-hmm. you know. And mm-hmm. so it's an awesome program. And like I said, I have an 11-year-old son that I'd like, when he hits 16, if we're still doing this, he'll be in class whether he wants to be or not.
Oh yeah,
you know,
it's a wonderful thing to be able to offer this in our area. And so, Lynn, well, you know, I certainly thank you for coming this afternoon, and we're both sitting here like a couple of frogs, cough, hack, hack, and old grainy voices, but, you know, we're doing our best. And, you know, touching on that information about dual arrest, what that is and how it affects our community and law enforcement. And so I'd like to thank everybody for listening today. I'd like to thank you, Lynn, once again.
Thanks for having me.
And, of course, Lynn is, you know, she's one of the regulars because she does have so much knowledge about this issue of domestic, and, of course, we talk about sexual violence as well. And so, once again, thank you to all of our listeners today. And you have been listening to the Domestic Violence Awareness Education Program. And I am your host, Donna Hawkes.